Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge, show number 18th, March 26, 2012. And this is the Writer's Lounge, as I said. And my co-host, Robin Eduardo, will be out. My name is Tom Riddell. I am your host. And a brief intro to today's show, we will be bringing on Eric Ekstrom. He wrote Everett Holmes, The Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer. He'll be on shortly, about a quarter after the hour. But until then, we will discuss some other topics. And first, of course, we're going to talk about where you can find us on the Internet. The Writer's Lounge blog is over at tomriddell.com/blog. You can go there to listen and to read your favorite author's reviews. And the Blog Talk Radio player is in the upper left-hand corner of that review site. Also, of course, everybody has them. Go to Facebook on the link on the Blog Talk Radio site. Click on the link and it'll take you right to our page. And please like it as our numbers are continuing to move towards that 1,000 mark. Love to have you like us there. Also, of course, we have an email, twl11@yahoo.com. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we've had a lot of authors calling in and emailing. Actually, I've gotten a few phone calls from a couple of authors who are requesting to be on the show, and as it stands right now, I am happy to report that we are all booked up through July. So we've got some great authors coming up here in the very near future and on into the summer. So stay with us here on the Writer's Lounge show, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy us here and the authors that we bring on. The upcoming guest authors, next week, we're going to have on Naturi Thomas. She wrote a memoir, How to Die in Paris, and she will share with us her exploits and dark days as she wandered around within the shadows of the Eiffel Tower over there. She had some very difficult days and a very interesting read, and I'm sure you're going to love that, so make sure you tune in next week. Also, I need to let you know that Gazpacho, that little worm guy that was on last week, the cute little guy there, and his friend, Robert Nikpon, has worked to get his book up on to the Amazon site. And you can go there now to download a copy of his book on the Kindle Amazon site. So head on over there, punch in Gazpacho. Gazpacho, I think it's another it's another story. So go on over there and plug that in. Gazpacho for everybody that needs the spelling of that. And I'm sure that Robert will be happy and Gazpacho will too. We're looking forward to promoting his book further here on the Writer's Lounge. Okay, with that, caller instructions. We're going to have on, as I said before, Eric Ekstrom here in a little bit. And when he comes on the program, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And please hold on and we'll get to you when the author comes on. And now, as I normally do at this time, I would like to introduce the lovely and or talented Robin Eduardo, out there from New Jersey. And you could tell, Robin, that I changed it up a little bit, and I think I protected myself on both of those adjectives there.
And or.
And or. Lovely and
a
or.
A little of column A and a little of column B.
Right, exactly. If you don't think she's lovely, she is talented. And if you think she's talented, she may or may not be lovely, but I think she's both.
Oh, thank you.
What you got going today, Robin? Anything exciting?
The only exciting thing, it's exciting to me, is I have my adopted, quote-unquote, daughter, which is, she's actually the daughter of one of my best friends that I helped raise ever since she was about 3 years old. And now she's in her 20s, and she's in the Air Force, and she was fairly recently deployed to Afghanistan, but she's back, and she's going to be leaving the first week of April to do a tour over in England. Near, I think she said it's like 90 miles, the base is like 90 miles away from London,
okay.
And she'll be out there for like 3 years, so...
No
I've had
combat.
It all week.
No combat for her, though, right?
No, please. She did Iraq and she did Afghanistan, so I think she deserves a little decent, you know,
absolutely
downtime in a nice locale.
And I think we all applaud everyone over there who has put their life on the line for us over here, and she's with no exception to that. So give her our best and wish her. Godspeed in her service as she continues to serve this great country of ours.
Yeah, she's a good girl. She really is, and I'm very proud of her. But I do. She and her husband are both here for the past week, and they're going to be leaving tomorrow, as a matter of fact. But we did Atlantic City gambling. We went into New York City and walked around a little bit around Central Park and Chinatown and saw the sights and. And I'm exhausted. It's been a very busy week.
Yeah, you were mentioning Atlantic City, and we talked a little bit off the air about the casino, and I went to a casino today and put $30 in my car and walked out of there with $225 to my name.
Yeah, that's great.
So I did really well, and that's not usually like me, because usually I'm the guy who walks out with his, well, pants down.
With the sad face.
Pants down, but... Lost my pants kind of like thing, you know. So
with your pockets turned inside out.
Exactly. With a big frown on my face as I just kind of shamble along the parking lot, kind of like a zombie. I wonder what a zombie would be like after they lose money. Of course, they're not into losing money. They don't care about money. They care about flesh. So
that's right. Brains or something.
Imagine that would be kind of neat to gamble flesh or to try to win flesh instead of money coming out of the slot, you get all this flesh that would come out.
There I think they did that in the days of the Romans in the Colosseum.
Yeah. Well, they had casinos back then?
There wasn't a casino, but I mean, I'm sure people in the Colosseum placed bets on their favorite, the gladiators or the Christians and the lions, you know, who was cheering for the Christians and who was cheering for the lions or who was cheering for... What was his name? Gladius Maximus? Whatever it was.
Maximus.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of gambling for flesh.
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, you do
get
a slot
into weird tangents.
It would be kind of fun, I think, to do it on a slot machine, have the flesh come out.
Ew.
So,
that was another thing. Diana insisted on, that's her name, is Diana. She insisted on trying to find a slot machine that still had the lever that you pull down.
Oh,
yeah. Because they don't have those really anymore now.
They don't.
They don't even give you coins. They give you a paper printout.
They do. And I was told that they eliminated those levers because it took up too much room. So they can push more slot machines together.
Yeah,
and
machines.
Get more of your money because they've eliminated that side lever there. That's what I was told.
Yeah, well, we found one, and she was happy with that.
Well,
but it was kind of funny. Because you see them in the movies, so you think, she had this, whole preconceived notion of what the casinos would be like. But, it did follow through the whole thing with beginner's luck because she also won. So, you know, you and her were the big winners of the, the casino world this week.
Affectionately called the unarmed bandit.
Yeah, in the mail today, I was so angry because I got a thing in the mail for a free comp room. And why couldn't they send it to me the other day when we were going? I received it after the fact.
Oh, well. Anyway, Robin, let me get on to my topic.
Yeah, we need to move on.
It's appropriate to the author that we're having on here today, and it's about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I don't know how many of you have heard of him, but he is a writer. He's dead now. He died in 1930. He was born in 1859, and he wrote a lot of the Sherlock Holmes novels that a lot of us have been used to down through the years. And I found it very interesting when I did a search for him. I came up with an actual YouTube video of him talking about how he came up with the character. And I thought it was interesting because a lot of us writers will create a character. And as I've said before in past shows, sometimes those characters take on a life of their own. But I was very interested to hear that a lot of people actually thought Sherlock Holmes was a real person and that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was actually writing his autobiography. And they actually asked him for an autograph from Sherlock Holmes. So I found that very, very interesting. And I myself, believe it or not, was a little not too sure whether or not he was a real person or not. So I had to go look him up myself, and that's what I found. But anyway, I've got a little bit of a clip here, and he talks about that and how he created Sherlock Holmes. It's not a long clip. It's about a three-minute clip, and I think the author that is coming on, it would be Eric Ekstrom, will find this interesting if he hasn't already listened to it. Like I say, it's a three-minute clip, and we will be back to talk to Eric right after this clip is over, and we'll mention a few things about the clip when it's completed. Be right back.
And I used, as a student, to have an old professor, his name was Bell, who was extraordinarily quick at deductive work. He would look at the patient, he would hardly allow the patient to open his mouth, but he would make his diagnosis of the disease, and also very often of the patient's nationality and occupation and other points, entirely by his power of observation. So naturally, I thought to myself, well, if a scientific man like Bell was to come into the detective business, he wouldn't do these things by chance. He'd get the thing by building it up scientifically. So, having once conceived that line of thought, you can well imagine that I had, as it were, a new idea of the detective, and one which it interested me to work out. I thought of 100 little dodges, as you may say, 100 little touches by which he could build up his conclusions, and then I began to write stories on those lines. At first, I think they attracted very little attention, but after time, when I began the short adventures, one after the other, coming out month after month in the Strand magazine, people began to recognize that it was different to the old detective, that there was something there which was new. They began to buy the magazine, and it prospered, and so I may say did I. We both came along together, and from that time, Sherlock Holmes fairly took root. I've written a good deal more about him than I ever intended to do, but my hand has been rather forced by kind friends who continually wanted to know more. And so it is that this monstrous growth has come out of what was really a comparatively small seed. But the curious thing is how many people around the world who are perfectly convinced that he is a living human being. I get letters addressed to him, and I get letters asking for his autograph. Get letters addressed to his rather stupid friend, Watson. I've even had ladies writing to say that they'd be very glad to act as his housekeeper. One of them, when she heard that he had turned to the occupation of keeping bees, wrote saying that she was an expert at segregating the queen, whatever that may mean, and that she...
Okay, and I apologize for the audio there a little bit. It once again came back to us from the, I believe, the 1820s that did, so it was a little difficult to hear. I hope you heard it okay. But I found it very interesting there that he referred to his character and the whole series that he wrote as a monstrous growth, and he also called Watson would be... Sherlock Holmes' assistant as a stupid friend. So I found that interesting, too. So anyways, on with the introduction to today's guest, Everett Holmes, A Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer, was written by Eric Ekstrom and published by Vigilante Publishing Group in 2011. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. The Amazon.com site promotes it this way. A sadistic serial killer is on the loose, carving up the mean streets of Chicago one body at a time, taunting the elite group of investigators assigned to the case. The killer leaves behind a bloody path of carnage and purposely placed trail of clues in the form of fingerprints that belong to some of the most horrific serial killers in recent history. The problem is, they're all dead. Private investigator Everett Holmes, great-grandson of the infamous Sherlock Holmes, is a man who has been dealing with his own personal demons for years. He has incessant drug and alcohol abuse, has only increased since involving a case that would make even the most seasoned investigator beg for mercy. This, however, was just the tip of the iceberg. Everett's true struggle is in his inner competition against a long line of Holmes men that had taken the law enforcement world by storm for generations. It was a competition he feared he would never win. And that was the Amazon.com take on the novel that Eric had written. What I have to say about it is Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a doctor, but he was universally known as a writer who enjoyed writing crime fiction. From his pen came the character Sherlock Holmes, who we all know as history's premier detective. Holmes used his keen logical reasoning and forensic science skills to solve several heinous crimes of his era. With a potently prominent gene pool in place, Sherlock's talents are passed on to the generations that followed him as Eric Ekstrom effectively recreates a modern-day Sherlock Holmes in the personage of Everett Holmes, the great-grandson of the famous investigator. The glue that held the story together for me came during a scene where Everett had a dream about a horrific event, which is central to the story, in which he meets the famous relatives of his past, including a pipe-smoking, advice-giving Sherlock Holmes. This sequence helped to enrich the main character, and it gave him a likable, interesting persona that stuck with him throughout the rest of the novel. This novel travels faster and gets better as you go along, sending you into a few twists and turns, successfully utilizing all the parts of a good crime novel. And I will give the author much credit, but the one thing I won't give him is the finger. And if you want to know more about that little last line that I threw in there, you'll have to read the book. And now it is my pleasure to introduce to the show, to the Writer's Lounge, Eric Ekstrom. And Eric, please forgive me, but there's a number of lines that popped up, and I don't have your number here, so I'm going to do like we did today and gamble, hopefully. We can bring you up on the phone here in just a second. And Eric, is that you? Hello, Eric. Okay, that's not Eric, and I apologize. Going to hang up there. Let's try this other one here. Eric, are you on the line?
Hi, Tom.
Okay, sorry about that little bit of problem here. We forgot to load your number and pay attention to your number, so you are on the air, and thank you for joining Robin and I today on the Writer's Lounge. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Pleasure being here.
Very good, very good. And you've got a lot of calls that will be popping up here, and we did have technical difficulties last week with one call that I can remember. but we will try our best to get those people on the air too. But first, I was wondering if you could read an excerpt from your book.
I'd be happy to, Tom.
Great.
I'll start out with it's just a little excerpt talking about the forged fingerprint killer, kind of just getting into his description a little bit. Starts out, hacksaw? No, maybe something more subtle should be used. A serrated knife? Still too barbaric for a process as delicate as this. Bone snips? Now you're talking. Now that's a precision instrument for a professional such as me. I wonder why I didn't think of this in the first place. The man, his face an ashen gray, looked deep into the broken mirror, each shard of glass reflecting back an array of misshapen deformity. He smiled with pleasure as his master plan was forming into some abnormal shape that he alone could understand. His teeth clenched tightly down upon each other. He moved his jaw back and forth, and the grinding of his molars could be heard above the rock music that blared off in the distance. His disheveled hair was dark and wet with sweat as it fell down over his face, completely covering his left eye. As he pulled his hair from his face in a smooth, sweeping motion, he looked once again into the broken mirror, and his bloodshot eyes came into focus. He looked back and forth at each of his eyes, back and forth as if in a trance, back and forth, one green and one brown. The contrast between the two was like night and day, purity and evil. He knew there were always two sides to everyone who walked this earth, whether they were rich or poor, Bible thumpers or murderers, they were all the same, and his eyes represented just that. In one smooth transition between the mirror and the body that laid in front of him, Eric von Cashwell took the stainless steel bone snips and cut off the finger of the deceased. The crunch of the bone made him smile and shiver with the excitement of a teenager during his first sexual encounter. He took the finger off as if he had done it 1,000 times before, yet this was his first. Cherry popped, a virgin no more. Eric had taken off the index finger of Ivan Redcloud, a sick, twisted individual who had in recent magazine article had been given the title Serial Killer of the Year. The national magazine had turned the killer into a rock star. The families of the victims had suffered such emotional distress over the article that they decided to get a lawyer and start up a class action lawsuit against the magazine that would be worth millions per family. In the meantime, the judge in the case ordered the article removed from the web and all other archives. He voiced his outrage in court and reminded them that there were going to be consequences to their vindictive and libelous article. The judge demanded that a personal apology by both the journalist and the magazine was to be given to the families, as well as a printed, very public apology in the magazine itself. The case never saw the light of a trial, but was settled out of court, and the plaintiffs were given an unknown monetary judgment. Ivan Redcloud had tortured and killed 26 men, women, and children in a two-week killing spree that spanned 12 states. Ivan, clearly nicknamed the Red Russian because of his Native American and Russian backgrounds, swore to everyone that he would come back from the dead as the deadly cocktail of the lethal injection coursed its way through his veins. Eric von Cashwell knew that it wouldn't be today or even tomorrow, but someday soon, Ivan Redcloud would return to his psychopathic ways. He would make sure of it.
Very good, Eric. And as we had said, we do have some phone calls popping in here. But before we get to those phone calls and our questions, Robin, do you have anything to ask Eric about? And of course, I should be introducing our lovely and or talented Robin to you, Eric.
How are you doing, Robin?
Hi. I saw that you liked my Facebook art page, which I've been remiss in updating, but yeah.
Yeah,
that was nice of you to do that.
Definitely a good page.
Oh, you were just looking at the nudie picture, I know. Why a Native American Russian?
You know, I wanted to do something a little different.
Yeah. That's a combination.
It sure is.
No, I thought that was pretty interesting.
I like to throw something a little different in there, you know? It makes the story more interesting.
Did you have did you do any like forensic types of research before you know when you were in the process of creating the story, or were you interested in I mean, do you watch stuff like that on TV or read a lot about it, or did you actually research it on the internet?
Well, actually, I've done a lot of forensic research for the book. I myself have studied both psychology and forensics for years, have diploma courses in them and stuff. With stories like this, research is crucial. I've actually attended conferences that pay close attention to actually the criminal mind and serial killers, and they were led by actually one of the first criminal profilers in the FBI, and he actually was one of the creators of the behavioral analysis unit out at Quantico. I get as much information as I possibly can. The internet has stuff, but I prefer book form. I read everything like textbooks, actually.
Right,
so.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting in today's age that you would actually go to a textbook, but I find that kind of refreshing, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, you can find anything and everything on the internet these days, but, you know, I think the majority of the details you can really find off the textbooks. The textbooks are made by people who have done this.
I imagine it probably pretty much keeps you focused on the subject matter. That's a good way of putting it, because if you do go out there and get your research off the internet, there's all kinds of different takes and different views of a certain subject. But before I get to a question that I have, we have somebody on the line here who's been holding for 7 minutes, like to get to their question or comment.
Yeah.
And even though we don't have a call taker, they can usually get their name and forwarded to us like they normally do on regular radio. What I'll have to do is give the area code to that person so they know that we're bringing them on the line here. So area code 979-415, you are on the Writer's Lounge with Eric Ekstrom. You got a question or a comment?
Yes, I just wanted to say hello.
Hi.
And I really enjoy your book, all of them. The Everett Holmes was, you know, a bit disturbing. Well, for me, because it was something new that I had never really gotten into before. But one of the questions that I thought about and wondered about, other than the fact that it is the great-grandson of Sherlock Holmes, to write and your character be someone who's addicted to drugs or whatever, in this day and age, you know, I think that, you know, there would be some controversy about that. I mean, even though it's refreshing to write something new and different, what made you fall in love or be obsessed enough to write about him?
I'll tell you, the issues that he has, which is addiction, is in millions of people around the world. And I believe that there are still many, many people out there with these addictions that function on a normal basis. They go to work, they take care of business, basically. And for a guy in his line of work, what he does is, you know, solving some of the most gruesome of cold cases. I think that there's a tendency for him to get involved in that kind of thing. But he still functions. And I think that I just wanted to make sure that, you know, he had some issues, because everybody in life does. But when you see that kind of thing every day, I think that's actually heightened.
Okay. Yes. Caller, what is your name?
This is Katie Jordan.
Okay.
And I also, if I could just make one more observation and question. About the Everett Holmes, I felt like, and I don't know if this is what you intended, but I felt like that in the book, he was redeeming himself in a way, and maybe seeing that even though he had these addictions, and he was very hard on himself about his own addictions, but you know, he did all these wonderful things, and it was sort of redeeming of his character. Was that intentional, or?
You know, the character actually wrote himself. He really did. It just flowed with that character. You know, there's a redeeming quality. He's trying to be the best that he can. He's trying to almost prove himself to his lineage, that he can be just as good as the rest of them were, even with the addictions. I mean, everybody knows Sherlock had some addictions and stuff like that back in, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's books. And I kind of brought that into it. But, yeah, there is a redeeming effect in this book, and that was kind of purposely put into it.
Very good. Caller, thank you for calling. We have other callers here, and those are some very good questions. I don't think I could have come up with them myself. And I know Robin, being in the field that she's in, can really appreciate some of those questions.
Okay. Thank you, Eric, and very nice to meet you, all of you.
You too. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Robin, do you have anything to add to?
No, actually, it's interesting that she brought up those points, because that's exactly it, that there are people who are, they're functioning. The term is a functioning addict. And that's very true to form. And also, when she mentioned about the redemption found, by the character, through his trials and tribulations in the story, and I think that rings very true, because I think, in my own opinion, based on, my own personal experience with addicts and alcoholics is, people who do experience that type of a lifestyle, people have these images in their head, preconceived notions of them, that they don't care, that they're just cold and callous, and they just don't have a heart. And I have found it to be the exact opposite. Most addicts and most, drug addicts and alcoholics actually do care and are very aware of their addictions and their issues, their emotional problems. And, half the time what they're doing is actually kind of like a self-medicating and to be able to get through, and to try to make some sort of it's a coping strategies. So the comment was very interesting.
Yeah, it was. And I think, too, Eric, if I could get back to a subject that you just briefly touched on regarding one of the scenes in your book, which I have to be honest with you, I enjoyed the read, but it was a cringe moment for me. The main crux of the story and the conflict here that causes Everett, I think, probably to indulge in his addictions would be, of course, that scene. And we won't go into the detail of that scene, but I think we'll just hold it out there for everybody. If you want to read it, read it. And you either have your pros or cons on whether or not that should have been included in the story, but I do think that it made the story extremely riveting. Did you ever have an inkling as to whether to keep that in there or to remove that? Did you ever think about that at all?
I actually did. During revisions, I took it out, put it back in, took it out again, ended up deciding, you know what, it's going to stay. Just the reality of it is, and I've gotten some flack for it. And I've also had people say it's just utterly, it's an amazing scene. It brings Everett to basically where he's at. And it was a hard scene to write.
Right.
it was extremely difficult. And,
It was hard to read too, but it was actually what you were saying is it did add to, I think, the characters' conflicts. And I think that if you did remove it, I don't think that we would have seen him in the same light as we did as the story went along. But Everett Holmes is the great-grandson of Sherlock Holmes, of course, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who we just heard from here just a few minutes ago. I wrote four novels and 56 short stories centered around the famous detective. Have you read these stories and researched a lot of Doyle's writing style?
You know, I think over the years, I've pretty much covered the entire library of it, I believe. There still might be a few out there that I've missed. But just, you know, fantastic writing. As far as his writing style, I see a format. It does change up here and there, but he has a format that he uses in pretty much every single book. And the short stories as well. It's something that I did not want to follow as far as his formatting. I'm all about the originality, and I think that's, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, is it when they heard the name of it and kind of the description of what it was going to be, they said, is it going to be another Sherlock Holmes book? And I said, no, it's completely different.
Right.
You know, go ahead,
yeah.
Tom.
You need to declaim the character as your own and the novel as your own, and I appreciate that. And I read a few of his books, but not extensively studying it as probably somebody like yourself might have. But I really enjoyed the book, of course, and I see we have another caller on here. And please forgive me, I should be writing down these numbers because we didn't want to get a repeat caller. It almost looks like the same area code and number, but we'll try it again. And let's go with area code 979-415. You're on with Eric Ekstrom on the Writer's Lounge. You have a question or comment? Hello? 979. Uh-oh. Whoop, there we go. We lost him. I guess I got kind of shy, Eric, but... Robin, you got anything there for Eric?
No, well, I was just interested in the. It was the same thing that had to do with, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's style of writing, and you know, and I appreciate the fact that Eric has changed it up because actually it's a different, completely different character. It's not Sherlock Holmes. It's his great grandson. So it's a different person in a completely different time.
Exactly.
So it should be different, yeah. So I do appreciate that you've changed it up and you know, you're kind of doing a modern take on, you know, forensic investigations and you know, all that compared to how it was, you know, back in Grandpa's day, Grandpa Holmes' day.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that was actually written.
Cool.
I believe, Eric, correct me if I'm not correct in this, but I believe that story, Sherlock Holmes, came about in, I think, the 1880s is when it really started to grow legs.
That's correct, yes. Actually, he started putting his stuff out in a local magazine. It was a magazine that he started putting the stories out in, and then it took off from there. And that was 1880s.
Yes. How long did it take you to write the book, and where do you go when you write such a novel?
Well, actually, the first draft I wrote in 30 days.
Wow.
It was my first try at, I'm sure you guys have heard of NaNoWriMo.
Yeah,
the National Novel Writing Month. And I didn't want to cheat on it. I came down day one with a blank page, no ideas. And in 30 days, actually, I calculated it out with the days that I actually did write, and it came out to 18 days for the first draft. So then it was another, you know, 6 months of revisions, but but the basis of the story was done in that short of a time, so...
That's
even
incredible.
6 months of revisions is really fast too. So, yeah, wow.
Well, I guess when you get focused enough on it, you know, when you're a writer, as you guys know, you see a good story, and you just want to work on it every chance you get. So, I think that's what I did with this. I saw that there was something new, such a good opportunity with this story, and I just kept rolling with it.
Oh, great! That's great. Oh.
In regards to the publishing process with that, Eric, how did that work for you? Any tips for our listeners?
I tell you, over the years, I've basically self-published with my other books, and a friend of mine who's also an author, actually he's strictly an ebook author, told me to try it out, and the price was right. So basically, I went with it, and it's actually been extraordinary for me. The process was easy. Went through Kindle, direct publishing. And, it's been out a year. Sales are still steady, and I can't complain. Gotten a pretty good fan club about it.
Is it in hardcover at all?
It isn't yet. I actually, through this book, was picked up by an agent, and right now they are trying to see if they can get it to a publisher and actually the entire series that I'm working on for it. So.
Cool.
That's
so,
fantastic.
Yeah, things came from it. So,
you're also, I see, a screenwriter. Can you tell us about that aspect of your writing career?
Yeah, I haven't sold anything yet. Still work in progress. I have two movies that I've pretty much completed, as well as two TV shows that I'm shopping around myself at this point. Mm-hmm. It's something. It's just another aspect of my writing that I've been trying to, expand my horizons in my writing. And as a writer, you try and get out there and try different techniques and styles and see what fits.
Very good, Robin. You got anything?
Yeah. Who's your favorite author? Do you have a? I mean, is it Sir? Author Conan Doyle, do you have a favorite modern crime author, or is that even the genre that you're most interested in?
Actually, to be honest with you, my favorite author is Stephen King. And has been since I was young growing up. just my favorite guy. And just recently, actually within the last year and a half, 2 years, I've been following a bunch of the indie authors. One of the guys is Mike Pettit, just fantastic, does a lot of pulp crime fiction. And, I like to shop around now. There's so many indie authors out there that.
Yeah.
What's
great about the whole Kindle thing going on right now, this whole new wave, is the indie authors actually get a chance to shine. I mean, if obviously, it's a lot more work, as I'm sure you're finding out on your own, in your own foray into it. But I agree with you. I'm discovering a lot of new indie authors that I wouldn't have ever, a few years ago discovered because of the fact that the Kindle didn't exist and self-publishing being what it was. I mean, it's not like, generally speaking, self-published works aren't found in the brick and mortar, so you didn't stumble across
so
them in the same way.
There are so many authors out there.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many authors out there to choose from now. Like I said, especially in the indie format, it's just amazing.
Right.
And of course, I've been doing for the last several months, coming up here in August, it'll be a year, but reviewing all of these new authors has been an exceptional positive experience for me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people, I had no clue that they'd have such great talent. I mean, there's a lot of these books that I've read that should be on the New York Times bestselling list. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing lacking, I believe, probably in that whole process would be a decent agent and a publisher that would be willing to take the step to put somebody with talent like yourself, Eric, on the list. So they're out there, and I imagine they're getting swamped from a lot of these people that either do have agents or they're going their own route by self-publishing. But anyways, we do have, and we're only going to do this one more time, folks, because last week we tried it, and what we got was three strikes and they're out. So I see.
Yep.
The area code 979-415 is back, and this time I made a note of the number so I don't forget it. And this will be your last chance to call in. I'm not saying you're hanging up on purpose, but we will try to get you on the air. And you're on the Writer's Lounge with Eric Ekstrom in the Writer's Lounge. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have another question. I wanted to ask Mr. Ekstrom, of his characters, of all of his books, which of your characters is mostly like you? Which one did you fashion, like, after yourself, mostly?
You know, a lot of my characters have a little bit of myself in them. I think that in one of my past books, which was Storyteller 2, Chicago Blood, Johnny Roselli is a lot like me as far as, you know, growing up in the city of Chicago. And I also have a love for the 20s and 30s, which that story is based in. So there was a lot of emotion into that one. As far as the new book, a little bit of Everett, and also kind of his semi sidekick, a guy that's learning from him, Tommy O'Hare. You know, that guy he actually appears in the next novel as well. And there's a lot more information about him in that, the new novel that's going to be coming out. But that character right there is probably 75% me. So,
right.
So you'll get to see a lot more of him there.
All right, very good. Thank you, caller, for calling in again. And Eric, that was nice of her to call in. And let's see, make sure I didn't mute the wrong person here. I'm going to leave her on the line. Oh, there she goes.
Regarding
what you just talked about was some of your other books, and I have been on your Facebook site and noticed that you wrote a children's book. There's a little boy there, I think, in one of your pictures who was holding up one of your books, and I was intrigued by that, and I'm sure that you've got a lot more under your belt. So can you tell us about some of your other books that you've written, and what can we look forward to from you in the future?
Okay, well, I've written two books in a series that's called The Storyteller. The series isn't completed yet, still stuff in the works, but like I said, that's geared more towards young adult with a historical fiction background to it. I've also written two books in a children's series called Pug Tales, which is basically about my dog. That is kind of a grounding book for me. When I turn around and write these, you know, psychological thriller books, that when I write a children's book after that, it kind of brings me back down to reality, evens me out.
So how many books have you written, Eric?
Five so far.
Five, okay.
Yeah, five so far. I have, I'm actually starting the revisions for the next Everett Holmes book, starting that in a couple days here. The third book in the Pug Tales series is coming out, I believe, in the fall. And let's see, I got about six other Everett Holmes books that are outlined and ready to start rolling on that. And I also just started a rough draft on a new series. It's going to be called Dark Journeys, which is more of a paranormal genre. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think that's about it right now.
Yeah.
Very good.
Busy. Yeah. That's cool. Because I admire people who can, you know, not only work on the one novel and outline others and I have a couple more on the way, and, you know, they have them all kind of figured out what they want to do, because I'm still working on the same
novel. Yeah, I'm still on my number one novel.
I wrote a novel. Yeah.
So it was interesting to find out that you wrote other books, and I'm really looking forward to reading some of those, and I hope that I'll have a chance to do that. Maybe you can come back on the show with the second installment of Everett Holmes. Would you be interested in doing that?
Oh, I would definitely enjoy it.
Cool. Besides writing, what do you do?
You know, I like to travel. to me, I'm not the type to just, like, lay on the beach. I like to go see things of historical value. One of the best places I've been so far is Washington, D.C., just for historical value. I'm actually planning a trip to Ireland and Scotland, and that actually coincides with another book that I'm working on. And a little on-the-spot research, you know. And also a movie buff and an avid photographer. And, yeah, that's pretty much what I do for fun.
Cool. What's your advice for aspiring writers? What would you say to people out there right now who are listening to you that would like to, you know, kind of start off where, or start up what you've been doing?
You know, just a few things. Just never give up on your dream. You know, writing isn't for everybody, but, you know, people think it's easy with no stress. And but once they get started with it, they find out how much stress there actually can be with writing. But if you love it, then don't stop. You know, the other thing is you always want to ask other writers for advice. And with social media the way it is, you can find authors everywhere, and 99.9% of the time they're willing to help you out and talk you through scenarios and ideas and help you out with that. And, you know, the last thing I want to say is just be as original as you can be. You know, the cookie cutter book it gets old. Where people have the same thing out there over and over and over again. So just be as creative and, you know, push the envelope, do what you have to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you're not a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I'm glad you took a different approach to a character that he might have written, but it's refreshing to know that you're not following in his footsteps as far as his writing style. I was really glad to hear that.
Well, thanks.
So any other subjects that you'd like to touch on from your book, or let us know about where we can find you on the Internet?
Well, you know, like we kind of discussed earlier, the book has a few scenes that might be disturbing to some people. But really, I don't want to sugarcoat reality. You know, there's men and women in law enforcement every day that see this kind of thing. And I have quite a few police officer friends, and they've told me as well, you know, don't sugarcoat it. Go out there. Just write it. Like I said, push the envelope. And you'll get a much better read out of it. People will have that, I guess you could say, that wow factor that, you know, oh, my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. They actually feel like they're in the scene. And it makes them think. It makes them think about possibly even being more careful out there, you know. My books, they're all available on Amazon. And, you know, you can reach me at you know, quite a few different places, actually. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at The Author 1971. My blog is ericjekstrom.blogspot.com. And you can also look me up on Lioness Promoting and Agenting.
Very good. Robin, you got anything for Eric?
Oh, I don't even know what to... We covered everything, I think
we did. And
yeah, we really did, and it was very interesting to hear him, you know, Eric speak about, you know, the whole, you know, psychological aspect of this type of you know, killer, the mind, you know, mind of a killer, and then the mind of the investigator. You know, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a law enforcement background, and I can tell you that he's right on with what he was saying about there's a lot of atrocities that are happening out there, and we shouldn't sugarcoat it. We should let people know exactly what's happening out there. And for his character to be in a situation that he was in, to witness what he witnessed, and once again, that's a little bit of a teaser for you folks out there that'd like to run over and get Eric's book, but it's quite graphic and it's quite disturbing, but at the same time, I think it adds to the character and it certainly adds to the story and compels you to continue reading. And that's what kind of pulled me into it. Of course, I did mention a sequence there, a dream sequence, which I thought also did the story justice by bringing in his relatives from the past. And Eric, you did an exceptionally good job with that. I could almost feel the essence of Sherlock Holmes standing in the room during that sequence that you wrote about.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That was a scene that it took me a while to write, because anybody who is a follower of anything from Sherlock Holmes, it had to be right. It just had to be done the right way, and there was a lot of revisions on that to make it the way it was. So
yeah, not only that, but you sort of gave the character more spice or more intrigue when you mentioned his relatives that came after the famous Sherlock Holmes. So you brought in those characters also, which I think strengthened the character a great deal, and you deserve a lot of credit. I know what it's like to sit down and trying to envision some of the scenes in a book where it actually will be the foundation of the rest of the story, and I think that was a very compelling scene, and I think most people out there will agree with me. So, Eric, we're getting close to the end time here. I don't mean the end times as in the world's going to end. Of course, you'd be
2012.
Well, I suppose. Well, so before that date comes, folks, get on over to Amazon Kindle and pick up a copy of Eric's book, The Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer. Make sure before you put in that title, make sure before that you put in Everett Holmes, because it's part of a series that Eric is writing. And once again, Eric, thank you so much for being on the Writer's Lounge, and we will bring you back at a later date when you complete the second book of the series, and it's really been fun. I think Robin will agree that we had a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Robin. And
it was nice
meeting you, too. It's been a pleasure being here tonight.
Okay. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, Robin, that brings us to the close of another show. Any parting words that you would like to give our listeners for the next show, which is coming up next week?
Parting words for the next show? We're not even
parting
at the next show yet.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, parting words, as what should they be doing within the week?
Within the week, they should be, well, I still think that within the week, they should be ordering Everett Holmes, The Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer.
Of course, they should do that. Or maybe going to a casino and relaxing a little bit, and that, you know, all of our time can't be spent in a book. So get out there, folks.
That's right.
If you're a writer, get out there and experience the world around you. Experience the lights and the sounds of a casino, and even maybe watch a zombie movie on TV for some thrills and chills. And I'm sure that Robin would appreciate that. So next week, Robin, we do have an author that I'm really looking forward to. We don't usually delve into the memoir part of
the book,
but this is a memoir coming up, and it's called How to Die in Paris. And yes, it's got some dark spots in it, but I think that when you read her book, which is now up on the blog, tomridell.com/blog, you will find it very interesting. So have a read of her book. Come on back next week and meet the author, Naturi Thomas, and we'll take a walk through the shadows of the Eiffel Tower together as she explains what happened to her in her not-too-distant past. So with that...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
That's going to be fun. So with that, as we normally say here on the Writer's Lounge, good reading and good writing, and we'll see you next week. Good night, Robin.
Good night.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.